Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. And on Sunday night, it's great once again to welcome online from the USA of the National Catholic Reporter, Editor-at-Large, Tom Roberts. Tom, good to talk with you again.
And it's great to be with you, John.
Tom, there's a number of issues which begin to overlap between Australia and the USA increasingly these days. A substantive concern raised by Barack Obama when he was here a few months ago was the environment, much to the disturbance of some of our senior politicians in Australia. And the Church itself is turning towards the environment as a major issue. A statement is being looked for. Hoped for, yeah, dare I say?
Well, really, as Pope Francis has promised us an encyclical, he has made the suggestion that it will be out sometime in June or July. And there are a number of Catholic environmental groups and people really concerned with integrity of creation and those kinds of issues in the United States who are trying to prepare people for the encyclical, raise the issues in quite a few ways. There are also not a few Catholics and groups who are trying to diminish the importance of this. Some conservative Catholic groups making the case that the Pope is really not an expert on the environment and can't make scientific statements about, you know, global warming and climate change and that sort of thing. So I don't know how much denial there is in the rest of the world. We actually are doing some stories to find out if there is as significant an amount of denial and in such authoritative spaces as some of our think tanks here.
When you look at magazines, say, like National Geographic, doing a cover story on the denial of science generally across the community, then I guess any issue in the environment concerning the churches is tapping a reservoir of discontent and disbelief or misunderstanding that's simmering there under the surface.
I guess that's the case. And I think this runs into another problem. Putting environment into, you know, the religious bin and saying there is a strong theological case to make for, you know, for really looking at creation in a new way and updating our presumptions about what it means to subdue the earth runs also into this problem of the enormity of the issue. I mean, the imagination just, I think part of the problem in the United States that we're finding is that you can't see the oceans turning more acid.
Yes.
You know, you can see photos even of ice melts on the in the Arctic, but no one really experiences it.
Yes.
It isn't the same as, you know, Lake Erie catching fire in the in the 70s and 80s.
Yes, so workers can see their jobs disappearing, and if the environmental protection is going to add to that, then the workers are going to turn to fear about their jobs disappearing.
That is another point. I think the other element in the that works on the conscience of religious folks who are looking at this, especially in this Catholics in this Francis era, is that the poor and those on the margins are usually in the places first really hit by the severe storms and the what we're seeing as the consequences of this of climate change. And I think that there's a case to be made there that this deserves a lot of attention and more immediate than not.
It's an interesting role for the church as a universal instrument, that is, reaching above localized national concerns and talking to its universal mandate.
Yes, and I think in that regard, the Pope will find a great deal of sympathy in other parts of the world, certainly. Obviously, the one of the engines and one of the largest engines driving the argument against worrying about climate change is, you know, economics and capitalism in the United States. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to make the concessions that we're going to have to make. As you said, some jobs will be threatened. I think the case can also be made, and somewhat convincingly, that other jobs will be created. But that's, you know, that's a debate apart from the moral issues involved.
And it will be deployed in the current, the beginnings, the stirrings of the presidential campaign, which have already begun to tick off this week.
Yes, we have our first candidate.
We shall explore that.
A declared candidate, yes.
we'll explore that a little further in the months to come. Let's turn to a couple of the issues which Australia and the USA do share, specifically around church matters, and increasingly so over recent days, and that's a continuing crisis over sex abuse and the way the church is responding to and handling it. Recently, we've had an Australian bishop, Wilson, named and potentially brought before the courts on this issue. In the USA, you've had a bishop, Finn, who was convicted and given a suspended sentence. But I understand that the issue is still not resolved, certainly to the satisfaction of many of the parishioners.
Well, I think the people in that diocese are still wondering how someone who's criminally convicted of covering up for a priest who was involved in taking and maintaining, and we don't even know about it, perhaps distributing child pornography, how he can remain in office. And, you know, given Francis's strong words about accountability, the necessity for accountability on the part of bishops, and the appointment of the Commission on Sex Abuse, people there and throughout the United States, but especially in the diocese, are wondering, well, what does it mean? Is there any accountability? Because here's the highest level official in the church ever convicted criminally of a crime involving child abuse. He did not abuse himself, but he protected and failed to report a priest who had been abusive. And it's stymieing here.
The church have not suspended his faculties.
Has done nothing, right. Now, they've investigated, and we know that because somebody from Rome came and took testimony from a number of people, but there's been no other movement on it, and we're just all sort of left wondering what will happen. I think, too, this month, the appointment of a new bishop in Chile raised a lot of objections from, you know, survivor groups and people who are concerned with this issue. Bishop Juan Barros Madrid was appointed to head the Diocese of Osorno, Chile. And survivors there, people concerned with sex abuse there, say that a priest, Father Fernando Cardima, as a priest and a once renowned spiritual leader and a church figure in Chile, was found guilty by the Vatican in 2011 of sexually abusing minors. The survivors say that the new bishop, Barros, not only worked to cover up his crimes, but actually witnessed some of them as they happened. Now, I don't know what kind of investigation has occurred, and the Vatican today said that there was no objective criteria for not moving ahead with that appointment. But the information and the Vatican's response to the concern has certainly been inadequate in the eyes of an awful lot of people who have been working on this issue and held out hope that, you know, this new pope and the commission would bring a new kind of scrutiny to this.
Well, the International Commission has only recently been appointed. It includes Australia representatives as well. So I guess there remains to be seen just what teeth it has and when it can begin to make rulings or guidelines that are going to be taken notice of.
Yes, but it is good to note here at this point that I think two of the lay members of that commission have voiced deep concern over this appointment and the Vatican's response. They're not yet giving up on the commission, but in one respect it's hopeful that when you hear that lay people are not afraid to raise the concerns, that perhaps if it were an all-cleric commission would not be voiced at this point. But we'll see what happens.
Mm. Now, another big event coming up that we share in common is the Synod and the Family, a global synod of the Church. The Church has called for, the Pope Francis in particular, called for people down to the local parish level to be involved in being consulted. This has happened to varying degrees. In some places, those consultations have been very heavily administered by the Church and influenced by the Church. In other places, it appears to me there's a sort of a more open and general capacity for people to have their say and to hopefully get it taken notice of.
Yeah, NCR did a survey recently of 33 Latin Rite archdioceses and 145 Latin Rite dioceses, and found that roughly 52% of them have begun to gather information in some capacity. Now, this was done in the middle of last month, so that most of that compiling or taking information has been completed. But some of the dioceses had very elaborate processes for doing this. They had websites that allowed people to make comments. I think a few of them had listening sessions in addition to putting up the lineamentos. Some of them sort of summarized the document in Rome that had, I think it was 46 or 48 questions on it, into major categories. And so it is an unprecedented, at least in my experience in covering these kinds of things, in the solicitation of comments and the openness. I don't know how they verify all this stuff, and I don't know how they're going to sort of collate it and categorize it and use it, but it is certainly a welcome effort on the part of the Vatican and local bishops here by a lot of people who have found it refreshing to be able to at least voice some opinions and some concerns on the issues raised.
And for those in the wider public, it has a particular significance in that this goes, for many Catholics, particularly conservative Catholics, to their bedrock faith issues, that is, at the heart of family, marriage, what these things mean. And these are often bellwether issues for conservative Catholics, and as such, the influence spreads out into the wider political substance of the community on the way issues are argued in civil society.
Well, yes, and I think, yes, the way they are argued in civil society, and we have big civil debates going on, the law that's called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in Indiana is one case that's causing an incredible furor, because the intent, according to the governor, is to preserve religious freedom and allow people to act on their convictions. The opponents and those who see something more sinister to it say that it's giving an open door to people who want to discriminate against, especially gays and lesbians and people who are in gay marriages.
Yes, it'll give businesses the right to refuse to provide their services to people in what they consider morally dubious positions, so that a photographer could refuse to photograph a gay wedding, or a
right.
chef could refuse to supply food for a same-sex marriage reception. And those who want this privilege are saying this is an exercise of religious freedom. Those who don't are saying, no, it's a curtailment of people's legitimate civil rights.
Right, and the interesting dynamic here is that most of the objection in this case is coming from the business community and the Chamber of Commerce and groups that are normally more sympathetic to, in this case, the Republican point of view. So it's an interesting case, and it's causing quite a stir. And the Republican governor of Indianapolis, capital in the major city in Indiana, is saying, "Please fix this right now." So it's an interesting dynamic, and it's not far afield from what's going on in church itself.
Yeah.
We're seeing this acceptance of, for instance, gays and lesbians and gay partnerships in a way that we never expected to see it, and the change is happening very quickly.
It's almost a generational change, isn't it?
It really is, yes,
yeah.
For the coming up generation.
Yeah.
It's just not an issue.
Yeah. And Pope
at
Franz,
the same time, I think yeah. Catholics are also finding this a deeper, a more acceptance and giving voice to it, to people who have been divorced and remarried and wanting them to become part of the community. So it's going to be interesting, in addition to soliciting all this information, it will be interesting to see what happens in that synod in October.
And in the midst of all this, Pope Francis himself is going to visit the USA.
Yes, and little by little we're getting some detail. We know he will be going to the United Nations. We know he will be saying a mass in New York, I think at Madison Square Garden. He will be giving an address to the U.S. Congress. Certainly visiting Philadelphia. What other ventures lurk, we're not quite sure. It seems that everywhere he goes, he wants to be amid the poor and the communities that are marginalized. And where that happens in the United States, and there will be plenty of opportunities in all those places he's going and around the places he's going, we just haven't heard yet. And the centerpiece of this visit is the gathering on the family in Philadelphia.
And of course, for most of those in the press, and increasingly those in the public and in the media, the big events don't seem to matter, in that the Pope is one who is quite prepared to offer little sidebar comments, and quite often it's the sidebar illustrations which tell more than the big events.
That's been the pattern. I would agree with you. Yes, and he, you know, our Rome correspondent Josh McElwee said it is becoming more common than not that he looks at the text and says, "Oh, this is boring," and just meets the moment.
Yes.
and talks from you know, certainly from his head, but also from his heart. That happened recently in a profound way when he went out to the outskirts of Rome and visited a parish, and he went and talked to the parish council. And it was stunning. And he was saying, stop going out to your people and telling them where they're wrong. Just be close to them. Be close to them. It was a message that he repeated and repeated. And in that scenario, in several circumstances, he just put the text aside. So it's going to be interesting.
Tom Roberts, interesting to talk to you always. Thanks for joining us once again on Sunday Night.
I really appreciate the invitation, John. Thank you.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.